This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guests today are Joel and Barry Schweitzer, who are married to one another and the parents of, what, one child, two child?
Two. Twins.
Twins. Ah, how old are the twins?
They're about to turn two.
But what we're going to be talking about is not your family today. We're going to talk about what you do professionally. And Barry, you are the director of education at Sinai mm-hmm. Temple in Champaign. And our topic today is Jewish education. And the reason we have this family show is because Joel is also the executive director of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois. How long have you been doing that, Joel?
I've been there for a year now.
1 year. And for listeners who may not know, what is Hillel?
Well, Hillel is now an international organization with organizations on campuses all over North America, as well as Israel, the former Soviet Union, and now more and more in South America as well. It started right here at the University of Illinois in 1923.
The very first Hillel anywhere.
Absolutely, and has since evolved from its humble beginnings here in Urbana-Champaign to a worldwide organization that has really helped bring about a Jewish renaissance in our younger generation today.
And that renaissance has been made possible because Hillel has focused on Jewish education.
In part. Hillel's mission is to create as many different portals of entry into Jewish involvement as possible. Jewish education is, of course, a very important one of those portals of entry, but the entry point may be different for different students.
Now, you're the executive director at Hillel, but you're not yourself a rabbi.
Correct, and that has been a trend over the last 15 years or so. There have always been Hillel directors that were rabbis and Hillel directors that were not. Used to be the majority were rabbis, and then over the past 15 years, the trend has been more to hire rabbis to do rabbinic work and hire administrators to do the administration. And my background is in Jewish Federation work and Hillel administration previously, so that's been the fit here. And in fact, we have this year a rabbi coming to campus, a rabbinic couple, through a program that the Orthodox Union and Hillel internationally have started over the last 5 to 7 years called the Jewish Learning Initiative. And so we are thrilled to be welcoming Rabbi Yitzhak and Rachel Falk to our Hillel for this year.
And that's another married couple. In this case, two rabbis married to one another.
Rachel is not a rabbi.
She's not a rabbi. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Oh, this is Orthodox. That's right.
Correct.
So if I understand correctly, in Reform Judaism, there can be female rabbis, but that's not true for Orthodox Judaism.
Correct. And there are also female conservative rabbis as well.
Oh, there are.
And cantors.
And Reconstructionists as well.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, as we're sharing Jewish education here, let me switch to Barry for just a minute. Now, you've been at Sinai Temple also for about a year as director mm-hmm. of education there. Many of our listeners are familiar from their religious traditions of education for children, mm-hmm. but yours also includes religious education for adults.
Absolutely. I'm very proud of our adult education program. We offer on Tuesday nights, depending on what their interest is. We provide Hebrew for beginners. Last year, we also included Hebrew for prayer book learners as well as for intermediate and advanced. And we are continuing to provide different topics of interest, adult genealogy, some parenting courses, some interfaith courses. And if our members are interested, we're going to make sure that's there.
Now, would this be typical of other synagogues and temples in terms of things that they'd offer, or is this unusual because Sinai Temple is in a university community?
I think it's very special that Sinai Temple is in a university community, and that because of – but I want to say that every synagogue tries to strive to provide their congregants a certain level of interest, and I definitely think we're a special place. But in reality, I think it's we're still part of the norm.
Mm-hmm. And so, Joel, when you get students who come to the University of Illinois and choose to be active in the Hillel programs, have many of them come from this kind of a strong Jewish educational background, or do you get some who are kind of, well, I hate to say ignorant, but just not very knowledgeable about Jewish life?
And every point on the spectrum in between.
I see.
They really do. One of my biggest thrills as a Hillel director, and this is a story that predates my being here, actually comes from my staffing a Birthright Israel trip, where we had a student from Texas Christian University who had never been raised with any significant amount of Jewish education. And he came on this trip. The Birthright Israel is a program that was started about 5 years ago that provides Jewish adults between the ages of 18 and 26 the opportunity to go on a free 10-day trip to Israel. This particular student at Texas Christian University, again, had happened to see one of the few other Jewish students on campus wearing her Star of David, and he called out the only word in Hebrew that he knew, shalom.
Shalom.
and that launched the conversation that that got him on the trip. And he knew next to nothing about Judaism except for the fact that he knew his mother was Jewish. And there were a lot of people on this particular trip who fit that bill. At the same time, there was a segment of participants on the trip. And ironically, Barry just got back from a conference where she ran into one of my old participants from this trip that were very knowledgeable in Jewish education and background. They were part of a group that was co-sponsored by Hillel and an organization called Koach, which is the conservative movement's college organization.
Uh-huh.
So we had this interesting mix where we had these very Jewishly educated students from Koach and these marginally Jewishly educated students from the regional Hillel that I was a director of at the time. And what happened with this young man is his father ended up passing away 12 hours before we got in a plane to go on this trip. Mm. Now, we're in Israel, and I try to give the students every chance to get involved and every chance to get up in front of the group as possible. And I knew that the way to get this particular young man involved would not be to have him lead a prayer or lead a, sure. or lead a service. So I thought I would have him introduce the mayor of Ashkelon, who had come with a dance troupe to perform for us in the hotel after the end of Shabbos. So it was Saturday afternoon. We weren't, you know, it's Shabbat, the Jewish Sabbath. So we were in the hotel lobby. It was a day where people could rest and hang out and talk. And I thought, okay, this is my chance to ask this young man to introduce the mayor that night for the evening's program. And so I see he's in the lobby sitting with a young woman who was part of the Koach contingent. And I figured, oh, good, he's getting to know the young ladies on the trip. I sit down to ask him to introduce the mayor. He doesn't even notice that I'm there. After about 2 seconds, while I'm waiting for an opening to speak, I realize that this young woman from Koach is actually teaching teaching our participant to say Kaddish, to say the morning prayer for his father. And it was one of the most powerful moments of informal Jewish education that I've ever had the honor to be a part of. And I got up. They never knew the whole time until I relayed this story to them on the last night of the trip. They never even realized that I had sat down and I had seen this happening. But it was really, to me, something to really underscore the point that it's important that we involve people from all over the Jewish spectrum, from educated to non-educated, because what ends up happening is those that are educated have the opportunity to affect the lives of those that maybe don't have as high a degree of Jewish education. And it's an amazing privilege that comes with Hillel work.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with our guests, Joel and Barry Switzer, and Barry is spelled, if I think I have this right, is it B-E-R-R-I,
mm-hmm.
Barry? We're not encouraging phone calls today. We're not accepting them because this is a pre-recorded program because of the scheduling difficulties we've had this week as school is getting started and everything is going crazy around the university. So I want to thank our guests for squeezing this in on this pre-recorded time. But we will not be taking calls for Keeping the Faith this week. So I'll try to ask all the questions that listeners might want to ask, put a little pressure on myself here. Now, what about matchmaking? Does that happen at Hillel? I mean, Jewish survival is really an issue in this century, as it was toward the end of the last century. In this country, there are fewer and fewer Jewish people, and partly because some Jews are choosing to marry outside the tradition. So is that sort of an unspoken job of Hillel?
Sure. Well, the mantra of Hillel over the last 15 years or so has become maximize the number of Jews doing Jewish with other Jews, and there have been known to be a few astute student leaders who have shortened that mantra to doing Jews.
And with that in mind, I should also say, as I quickly change the subject, no, we actually have several congregation members. I can think of one right off the top of the bat who got married at the Hillel here, uh-huh. and who are very proud of the fact that they met at Hillel and sure. have gotten to know each other and had their wedding there.
Sure.
And I think that it's as Joel said, when the mantra is that we try to encourage Jewish kids to get to know each other and spend time together, that little matchmaking does happen.
Sure.
It's not a dating service, but at least you can meet other people.
We're actually, my parents actually met at Hillel at Louisiana State University.
Oh, really?
Huh. And,
you come from a Jewish family.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And what about you, Barry?
I do, too.
Where?
Well, interestingly enough, there in the 60s and 70s were Jews living in Las Vegas. Mm. And my parents met. Both were working in the hotel industry at the time. And I lived in Las Vegas until I met Joel.
Mm-hmm. Where did you meet? So,
well, that's an interesting story in itself as well. I was the B'nai B'rith Youth Organization director, which is the world's largest Jewish youth agency. And I was the director in Las Vegas. Joel was the director in Dallas. We met at a staff conference in Mukwonago, Wisconsin at the Bieber camp. And at that staff conference, the minute I met him, he walked up to me and started singing Viva Las Vegas. And I knew I was hooked. I'm just glad he liked me back or I would have been a stalker. I was that convinced I was going to marry this man.
And when did you marry?
In 2000.
Ah, fairly recently.
Yeah. Yeah, so I always say that we got married in 2000 so that when someone asks me how long we've been married, all I have to do is figure out what year it is.
Easy to figure. That's right. Should never miss an anniversary.
But I think from the beginning, as I was involved with Hillel, although Joel wasn't in college, Jewish education and like you said, the survival of the Jewish people has always been something that's been very important to the two of us. And independently and then collectively is when we got married, mm-hmm. that it is so crucial for us to be able to help educate Jews and non-Jews about our culture, about our traditions, and our history. And I'm really pleased that a week and a half ago, Sinai Temple had the first in our 100-year history. We've had summer camps in the past, but this was our first staff-led and staff-facilitated summer camp. It was a day camp for a week, and we focused on Jewish history and culture and traditions, and it was incredible.
Mm. Tell us what a Jewish day camp is like.
Well, it can, you know, always sort of fly by the seat of your pants with kids. And if we did our camp from kindergarten through eighth grade, and they were all members of our congregation. Many, because we hadn't in the past had a formalized curriculum, very often what would happen is we had kids who really knew nothing about some of our important traditions, about the Sephardic and Ashkenazi tradition taken from the Hebrew word of Spanish and German. So those are where the histories come from. There were kids who didn't know what keeping kosher meant.
Mm-hmm.
There were kids who didn't know just some of the different varieties of our tradition. And we were able to incorporate all of that in a week-long program, and it was just absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. We had an Ellis Island experience where all 30 kids got together and did this. I was so proud of my assistant for putting it together. It was a really, truly hands-on, living experience of what Ellis Island must have been like. And all the staff and the kids are still talking about it.
Mm. What are some of the high points of Jewish immigration to this country history?
Oh, the high points. Well, the fact that in the course of a 62-year period that 13 million – these are of all the world came through, of that – the hundreds of thousands of and millions of Jews that made through from Poland and Germany and all around the world brought some of the best talent, the smartest minds, the and it's just a phenomenal. I just got back from the Lower East Side where I've spent a lot of this last week at a conference. Yes, of course, the Lower East Side of New York. But I feel like I could go on and on. One of the biggest contributions that came out of the immigrant experience was after a tragedy, the Triangle Fire. Of course, the labor unions that were created, the positive energy that came across to try to make working conditions better, something I've spent the last couple of days studying. Mm.
Oh. And in terms of many listeners, of course, the WILL know that for many years, Jews were not welcome in this country. Mm-hmm. It was considered a Protestant Christian place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult for Catholics,
mm-hmm.
since the place was Protestant, for even Catholics to immigrate and be given citizenship. And then it was a struggle for Jews.
Right.
And some recently have pointed out that as recently as the 1950s, if one were homosexual, one could not immigrate to this country
mm-hmm.
and obtain citizenship. So there's been a change in the makeup of this country, from my position, of course, for the better, but from going from a very narrow religious tradition mm-hmm. to something much, much broader.
Mm-hmm.
Were your parents immigrants to this country, or grandparents, or how?
Well, do you want me to take that one, Joel? Interestingly enough, on my mother's side, they go back generations.
Okay.
My grandmother immigrated from Poland when she was a child, as well as Joel's grandfather did.
Mm.
So what was my special experience was that having my Bobby live with us my whole life meant that I am sort of that first generation as well, that
uh-huh.
there was Yiddish spoken in my house all
oh.
the time,
huh.
that I had that hands-on experience of having great food and culture, our culture, right off, from our house.
What about you, Joe?
My grandfather immigrated from Poland when he was three. The rest of my family's been here for a generation. My maternal grandparents were both born in Louisiana, actually, and my paternal grandfather immigrated from Poland and is still he's actually just turned 94 a week ago.
And he was the oldest bar mitzvah in Dallas. He had his bar mitzvah at 92.
Hmm. Wow.
And is just about the youngest 94-year-old you'd ever want to meet.
Hmm.
And another thing that's really special about Joel's family is that they, whereas mine, as I'm here, I'm talking about the Lower East Side experience and immigrating through the through New York, there were many families who immigrated through the South, like Joel's family did, through Galveston and St. Louis, as well as, San Francisco and other portals. But it's really, I think, one of the most, and I had no idea. Growing up with a bubby who came through the Lower East Side, I thought everybody, came through Ellis Island. And spending time with Joel's grandfather is a awakening to the Galveston experience.
I'll share one thing very quickly about my family background. I have a brother that studied genealogy, and so he found out that one of our relatives came over on the Mayflower, which,
wow.
when he told us, made us just so proud until we found out he was the first person hung for murder in this country who came on the Mayflower.
Oh, my.
He had established a family that came with him, fortunately, before he was. So I don't come from a particularly distinguished history. You mentioned, though, that genealogy was something that classes were offered at on Sinai Temple. Why is that?
Well, it's a special reason. There's two folds. The first, and they're just coincidentally, this year marks the 350th anniversary of American Jews in the United States,
yeah.
As well as it's our 100th anniversary of Sinai Temple.
Oh.
And so with the interest of our past.
Look at the history.
We're looking at the history as well as looking forward.
Now, Joel, the kind of university students that you and I experience regularly on campus, they're not much interested in history. At least that's my sense. Are Jewish students perhaps more interested in history than others?
It's an interesting question. I think they're interested in learning, in learning Jewish tradition and Jewish history. I'm not
maybe not genealogy.
Yeah, not so much the genealogy part of it, but I think as adults get older, there begins to be a little more more interest in the where did I come from prior to this generation. Mm-hmm. But I have a lot of the students that we see, of course, their families have been in Chicago for several generations, and so it's perhaps not as pressing an issue for,
sure.
for a lot of them.
Let's talk a little bit about numbers. How many Jewish students are at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana roughly? I know we don't get exact numbers, but.
Sure. It's between 3,000 and 3,500 are the numbers that I see most consistently, and that makes sense to me. That equates to about 9 to 10% of the university population.
And what's the Jewish population roughly in Illinois or in the U.S.? What percentage would that be?
Well, I know in Chicago there are about 275,000 Jews.
Okay.
In Dallas, where we just moved from before taking our positions here, there were about 45,000 Jews.
Interesting. Huh. In terms of programs that you have at Hillel for the Jewish students and others in the community, tell us a little bit about some of the ones that are really stand out.
I think where Hillel really stands out is in our quest to, as I like to say, not be all things to all people, but at the same time to be as many things to as many different people as possible. And I think with the addition of Michael Leff, who is our new Jewish Student Life Coordinator, we're going to be building on the niche interest groups that we've done in the past. You know, last year we had a women's group called Nice Jewish Girls who brought in a Jewish author, as well as did a few programs, coffees, and things like that.
I take it they named themselves.
Yes, we have our Jewish Career Center, which Anna Berezina, our former JCSC Jewish Campus Service Corps fellow, began last year, which is a mentoring program, which has been phenomenally successful. But this year, Michael's got a couple of things in the works. He's going to be launching a group called Trailblazers, which is a Jewish outdoors club. So they'll be doing camping and hiking and all things outdoors. We have an a cappella group that will be doing Jewish music, and we have a number of other small Jewish groups. And what's the wonderful opportunity that we have is to pull people together because they have a common interest, and then infuse it with something Jewish, and give them the Jewish piece of it, even though that may not be what brought them in the first place. A perfect example of this would also be something like our Alternative Spring Break program last year, which we did in conjunction with the Hillel in Uruguay, which is what was fascinating for me is here we were the first Hillel in the world doing a program with the first Hillel in South America.
Yeah.
They've now opened them since in Buenos Aires and in Chile, and I think there's one in Sao Paulo as well. Mm. So, this Jewish Renaissance is sparking up all over the world. When we went to South America for spring break, there was that certain sense of the students did get their time on the beach and their time
sure.
to have fun and enjoy being in another country, but they also had the social justice component. We worked in a very disadvantaged neighborhood in a community called El Cerro, where the students helped build a playground for this disadvantaged neighborhood, and just seeing the looks on their faces as they were able to bring about such a positive change and a positive impact on the children in this neighborhood was incredible. And that's a very Jewish value.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether they participated in the trip because they wanted to do a spring break full of tzedakah or charity work, or if they went on this trip because they wanted to go on the beach, they still got a very thorough component of Jewish values and education from that.
Mm-hmm. And there's something about that service learning combination that's just it just makes such a difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, service is really one thing that defines us as a people. We are one of the things that we are commanded to do is tikkun olam, repair of the world. God gave us an imperfect world, and it is our it's our role as Jews to help make it as perfect a place as possible.
Hmm. And how's that different from a mitzvah? What's a mitzvah is a good deed, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, it's a commandment. Mm-hmm. We're commanded to do good deeds. We're commanded to, and then that's the core of who we are.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not so much that it's different from a mitzvah, but it underscores that idea that doing good work is part of who we are. It is part of our cultural, religious, ethnic identity.
Right. When we contribute or we do tzedakah with our time, that's social justice. We're again commanded to do and make a change. So.
And when you mentioned this as an example of Jewish values, mm-hmm. What are some of the other key Jewish values that Jewish education tries to impart to both youth and adults?
Do you want to take that? Okay. It comes from ways of avodah, which is work. You know, you try to find different work projects, again, giving to the community. It could be things like, I love Joel talking about the Uruguay trip because they built this phenomenal playground for these kids. So here they were building, they were working with their hands, as well as doing things like what my kids are constantly doing, helping out in homeless shelters or in the area. And then it's studying, it's doing,
Bikur Kolim, visiting the sick. Which is another important part of what we did on the Uruguay trip, actually. And we also have a student group here at Hillel that does nothing but Bikur Kolim. It's said that by participating in this mitzvah, you relieve the afflicted person's pain by 1/60th. So there's an exact – so in the Jewish world, there is actually a mathematical component to how much relief you provide someone by visiting them when they're sick. And we have these students go to nursing homes. They go to if a student is sick on campus, they can call Hillel themselves, or a friend or a family member can call Hillel, and we will deliver them a container of chicken soup so that they can so they may not be able to get mom's chicken soup from home, but we'll bring it right out to them from Hillel.
Mm. That's wonderful. Let me reintroduce our guest. Here on Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Barry Schweitzer, who is the Director of Education for Sinai Temple in Champaign, Illinois. And we're talking with her spouse, Joel Schweitzer, who is the Executive Director of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois, the very first Hillel Foundation anywhere. And we're talking with them about Jewish education. This is an unusual Keeping the Faith program in that we're not having it, it's not live, and so you cannot call in and ask questions or comments this week. But that'll start up again next week when our guest, I might as well go ahead and mention, will be Larry Wilson, representing the Mennonite tradition of the radical reformed wing of the Protestant Reformation. That'll be August 28th. Our guest September 5th will be Don Mason, who will be talking about the World Alliance of Reformed Churches, again in the Christian tradition. Then on September 12th, we'll be talking with a couple of U of I students who are leaders of a program that provides tutoring to students in the local grade schools and middle schools and high schools, a program called Vis-a-Vis. That's September 12th. So those are some of the programs coming up in the future here on Keeping the Faith. I might just mention that support for this program is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker, and I'm the usual host for this program. The Y has been on campus for 131 years now and has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. One of our projects going on this week is called Dump and Run. Now, it's a very strange name, but it comes from a project that started in the East just a very few years ago. We're the first Big Ten school to have this program. But we encourage students when they leave the university in the spring and usually fill up the dumpsters. Instead of doing that, we say, come to the Y, dump your stuff there that you don't want to take home, but still might have value to someone. And we'll recycle it for you. So then you can run off home. And we save that stuff all summer, and we filled 4 semi-trailer loads full of furniture and food and games and toys and sporting equipment and clothes and all sorts of things. And this is the week we're now turning around and selling it very cheaply to people in the community, but also students, particularly international students. And this week, starting on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, we'll open at the Stock Pavilion at the University of Illinois campus. And they're on Pennsylvania Avenue at the Stock Pavilion opposite the cemetery. Find a place to park and come into the Stock Pavilion, and you'll find all kinds of great things to buy cheaply. Books, records, CDs. It's amazing all the stuff we've got. And international students can come in free. Others will have to pay $1 admission on Wednesday evening between 4 and 9 p.m. And Thursday we're open from 10 to 6 p.m. Those are the only 2 days where there's $1 admission fee. But we guarantee you'll find enough bargains. You'll be glad you paid the buck. We're also open Friday and Saturday, Friday from 10 to 6 and Saturday from 9 till 1 at the Stock Pavilion at the U of I campus on Pennsylvania Avenue. So dump and run. Please come and purchase things. You'll be surprised at all the stuff we got. All right. Well, let's get back to our guest today. Well, before I do that, I have been making a habit here recently of reading one poem at about the halfway part of this program. And I wanted to continue that today with a particularly interesting poem from a collection I've been reading from recently by Jean Murray Walker. That's W-A-L-K-E-R. Her book, published by University of Illinois Press as part of their Illinois Poetry Series, edited by Lawrence Lieberman. This is a book called A Deed to the Light, and the poem I'd like to read today, and this is, of course, with permission of the author as well as the University of Illinois Press, this poem is called Miss Leona Gifford's Hair. And I might just say in advance, since you don't have the opportunity as a listener to hear this twice, that the author is reflecting on an experience she had as a young girl with a teacher after the death of her father. So, Miss Leona Gifford's Hair. Long before my father died, we whispered how Miss Gifford was bald. That's why she wore her wimple summer and winter to hide her loss, we said. And I thought, the way I tried to hide mine. Because after we buried my tall father, he still cast a shadow, heaped up in his death, filling the four corners of the world, and whatever light the teachers tried to throw against my mind's wall, the good and holy beacons of history and science, were blocked by the shadow of my father. When my friends felt its cold edges creep toward them, they wouldn't touch me. They scattered like magnets fleeing from another magnet. I sat alone at recess on the slatted bench. One day Miss Gifford held out her thimble hand to me. I heard her say, "Help me carry these books." With my shadow hands, I picked up her books and walked beside her to her office, where she lifted their mortal weight from me. Oh, sing, muse, of how she turned and stripped off the black cape that we said made her fly like Zorro, how she unlaced the black rowboats that we said made her skim across the river Styx, how she took off the wire rims that made her eyes small as a pig's, how the blue eyes were wet, how she said, "I'm sorry, child," how she looked small and thin and trembled like a wet cat when she untied her scarf and shook out her blonde hair like a gift into the darkness. A poem by Jean Murray Walker, included in her most recent book, published just this year by University of Illinois Press, A Deed to the Light. Well, we can talk about the poem, or we can go back and talk about Jewish education. Of course, part of Jewish education is education about life and death. How do you deal with these big issues in the temple and at Hillel?
I was actually going to say that it's also a value of education as well, and that, you know, definitely we're quite pleased to have such great teachers, and that I only hope that they can do the same way that she did, to reach out to her students in such a manner. We're very lucky that most of our students come from Hillel and that they are phenomenal.
So you have college students who teach at the
Absolutely.
Who teach younger kids.
And we have some fabulous community members who are teachers as well. We're very grateful that we have them, but what makes our relationship so special is we provide a mentor relationship for those students who are college students who are teaching our kids.
How do you select what U of I students are allowed to teach kids?
Good question. Based on their experience, but also on their attitude and their eagerness and wanting to teach. Anybody could walk into a classroom and teach a textbook, but our mission is not to teach a book, but to teach a child. And that's.
Do you have more volunteers than you need, or do you always have to be recruiting them?
I can always use more. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
What's your phone number?
Excellent. It's 352-8654.
And what's one of the things that's unique about Sinai is even though it is a Reform synagogue that is part of the Union of Reform Judaism, because it is the only synagogue in a small college town. Like Champaign, there are members that are all over the Jewish spectrum. And not only are there members that are all over the spectrum, but teachers. And it's neat when I see the students that are involved in Hillel that are also teachers for the religious school, you see students that are that were raised through the Reform background, all the way through students who wear tzitzit and kippot and keep kosher and don't drive on Shabbos, et cetera. So it's neat that even though it's a Reform synagogue, the teachers may come from many different parts of the Jewish spectrum, and I think it's so important for our young kids, and I say that as a parent who will be sending his children, obviously, to the religious school
this year.
it's neat for me to know that our kids won't end up growing up in a world where they will think everyone is Jewish just like me
in a certain way,
right?
Yeah, because that is way. Now, before you go any farther, though, let's clarify for me as well as for other listeners some of these Hebrew words. Now, Shabbos, you've told us, is Sabbath, but what is this?
It's funny having the both of us talk. We just want to jump right in. Tzitzit are the fringed garments that traditional Orthodox or traditional Jews wear.
Now, are these garments that are seen by others or not?
They are often worn underneath the clothing. Some people will wear them out. The tzitzit have 613 fringes on them to stand for the 613 commandments in the Torah. They are knotted in a very specific and special way that it's outlined in Jewish law. So they're very, you know, it's a very exact kind of thing. And there are a lot of people who who you will see walking with them out, and there are people who wear them under their garments at all times too.
And the word kippot,
yes.
Also known as a yarmulke. Yarmulke is Yiddish, kippot or kippah is Hebrew, and that's the head covering, that traditional.
And one is singular and the other plural?
Right.
Okay. And why all these Jewish words? Why all these Hebrew words? Why not just speak English? Hey, you're Americans. What is this?
Well, that came up on the immigrant tour that I was talking about earlier. It's a big part of keeping our tradition alive, and that keeping those words, especially like using yarmulke for me instead of kippot or kippah, means that we are holding on to our past while helping our future. And as Joel was saying, learning from the folks that are maybe different, it goes back to a value in the Pirkei Avot, or the ethics of our father, who says, who is wise? It's the one who honors who learns from everyone. As it is say, from all who teach me, I gained understanding. Mm. It's so important to have that diversity, even within our own community.
But to ask another question for our listeners, since today this is a pre-recorded program and I'm asking the questions today, but doesn't that make Jews seem insular and separate them from other people? And isn't that kind of sectarian? And doesn't that go counter to the American experience, which should be diverse and accepting of everybody?
Well, I think that's the question of, are we a melting pot or a salad? And I think that very often especially after walking in the footsteps of my great-grandparents and my grandparents this last week, I think there were lots of Jews. At Ellis Island, they have done some uncovering of in the water outside of the island itself, and there were multiple amounts of tzitzit that we were just talking about, and tefillin, one of the prayer pieces that we use, people threw some of their most important family artifacts overboard because they felt they were in America now, so they mm-hmm. could let go of their Jewish identity. Mm. But for Joel and I, speak for the two of us, that we believe that it enhances our experience as American Jews. It enhances our experience as Americans. It's part of who we are.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it dangerous?
Yeah, I think there's a natural tension between diversity and being a community accepting of all others, and I don't think it is a mutually exclusive tension. I think you can express individual identities as a group, as a people, and not say, well, okay, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be involved in the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. I think it's important that the Jewish people don't insulate themselves from the rest of the world, but rather are participatory in the big picture of life. And I don't think that being knowledgeable in your language or heritage or expressing those things, while it certainly could have the danger of providing an easy way to insulate yourself from community, I don't think it's necessarily the case that one automatically follows from the other.
I was thinking more of the danger of anti-Semitism, mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. more of the danger of the more we identify ourselves as Jews, mm-hmm. the easier it is for people to blame all kinds of things on us and discriminate, or even worse.
Interesting. I'm very proud to be Jewish, mm-hmm. and to me the worst thing in the world that could happen would be that me or students that I work with start to worry that they can't wear a Star of David mm-hmm. or wear a kippah. And in fact, this was something that I've experienced on campus before. I had students that I took to Israel that had all of a sudden were becoming very proud of being Jewish and wearing jewelry or wearing other symbols of Judaism, jewelry with a Star of David or with a Chai, which is the Jewish word for life, and wearing outward signs of Judaism, and then going to a point where on campus people felt like maybe there was a little anti-Semitism, and so then there became this reaction of, well, maybe I can't wear that Star of David anymore. Maybe I can't wear that Chai. And it really saddened me and also gave me an opportunity to work with those students and try to get them to recapture that feeling of pride in Jewish identity, to allow them to feel comfortable wearing those symbols again.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Barry Switzer and Joel Switzer, a married couple who are parents of twins and who are concerned with Jewish education. Joel is executive director of Hillel Foundation, and Barry as the director of education for Sinai Temple in Champaign. In terms of anti-Jewish attitudes and expressions and difficulties, how much of a minority are Jews in America today? How many are we talking about total?
Well, worldwide, they're half of 1% of the world's population.
Yeah.
And in the United States, it's 3%. Okay. Is that too high?
I think you have better numbers than I do. I'm not sure.
So we're talking about a relatively small number of people compared to, you know, the huge number of Protestant Christians, for example. And I understand that now with recent immigration, there may be about as many Muslims in the U.S. as there are Jews. So that's been a big change very, very recently here. But in spite of being a small minority in this country and worldwide, you feel it's important for Jewish young people to grow up being proud of who they are and to understand who they are as Jews. But you're also willing to risk them getting to know people well from other religious traditions. I know, for example, Joel at Hillel has been involved in many interfaith things. You're an active participant and an officer in the Religious Workers Association.
Sure.
Together, the YMCA and Hillel and others are planning a trip to Jerusalem that will include Jews and Christians and Muslims. How are you willing to be so open to interfaith things, given your concern with Jewish education?
Well, I think it comes back to that idea of not insulating ourselves from community. And it's important to me to recognize that there's a world out there for us to be a part of, and that that by isolating ourselves from other diverse backgrounds, we're not taking the opportunity to, first of all, learn about others, and second of all, we're not giving others to the opportunity to learn more about us and our backgrounds and our hopes and dreams and thoughts and backgrounds. And I think if we want to create a world where people, if not always understand, but at least have the ability to tolerate one another and to live together, then we better be willing to learn a little bit more about what the other where the other guy's coming from. And I very strongly believe that.
I think that my biggest role as educator at Sinai Temple is to help to provide a foundation for our children that builds their identity. It gives them a sense of purpose, and it prepares them and helps them to be a representative in the community of what it is and who it is to be Jewish, and to be able to take pride in who they are. And that's the pure essence of what we do.
Now, you've spoken about the different traditions within Judaism. How do you deal with those differences at, say, Hillel?
Well, we on a Friday night, for example, you'll walk in, and if you came to Hillel at 6:30 on a Friday night, you would walk in and you would see people going to three different services. There would be a Reform service, a Conservative service, and an Orthodox service all going on at the same time, which is wonderful because it allows us to provide for the religious needs of very diverse communities. I think, as you said earlier, the Orthodox wouldn't have a woman leading services, but to a Reform person, that could be very very spiritual. The Reform group might also use a guitar, might use more English, might do things that the Conservative or Orthodox minions would not. But the important thing is that at 7:30, when all three of those services and minyan is each service is a minyan is a group of at least 10 Jews, So when each of those three services are over, we all come together and we have dinner together.
Hmm.
And one of my favorite parts, just for myself, last year during the high holidays, I found a particular point in the building where at the same time I could hear the guitar from the Reform High Holiday services, the chanting from the Orthodox High Holiday services, and the group from the Conservative, and I could hear them all at once, very, very non-distinctly, all jumbled together. And to me, that was the essence of what Hillel is. We're here for everyone, no matter where on the Jewish spectrum you are. We want to provide for your needs. We want to spark your interest. We want to make you know that there's a place for you at Hillel, whatever your background is. In fact, one of the things that always saddens me a little, and I just had this happen about an hour and a half ago. I met a student, a Jewish student on campus. She found out I was the director of Hillel, and she was like, "Oh, I couldn't go to Hillel. I'm not religious." And every time I hear that phrase, I think, you know what? We've got more work to do. Uh-huh. Because that perception that Hillel is only for religious people, no matter how you define religious, and everyone who says that statement to me probably has a different perception of what Hillel is like.
So what did you say to her?
I said, you know what? You don't have to be religious. You can just come and hang out and talk and play pool or play ping pong or sit on the couches, read a magazine, and meet
or
other
eat.
People. Or eat. Yes, we certainly – that's you've touched on an extremely important component of any Hillel program.
Tell us about Jewish food.
Wow. Well, you know, the inside the big joke, of course, is the typical Jewish holiday is they attacked us, we won, let's eat. That's so every holiday has its own array of food. From Passover, where everything on the Seder plate and everything we eat has a very specific meaning and is tied to our own group memory of being slaves in Egypt, to Hanukkah, where we eat everything fried in oil and we commemorate the oil that lasted for 8 days when we thought there was only enough for one.
Judaism incorporates all of the senses, and when you're hungry, that's, you know, it definitely stimulates that too.
Yeah. But it also goes beyond the holidays, and just the idea of a good bagel. When we do one of our bagel brunches, which we generally have at Hillel about once a month, we'll get 75 students, 50 of which I've never seen before, but they know if there is a bagel bar, they're going to be at Hillel.
But how can you get good Jewish food in the Midwest? I mean, we think of Jewish food being in the New York delis and things like that. How can you find it in the Midwest?
Well, we have a cook at Hillel that makes our meals. There is kosher food available. Very recently, the availability of kosher food in Champaign-Urbana has gotten a lot better. Hmm. Just since I've been here. When I first came, every time we wanted to get a supply of meat, we were driving up to Chicago to get kosher meat there. But we've been very fortunate in that the old time meat and deli shop opened up on Neal Street, and they stock the entire line of kosher food from agriprocessors in Postville, Iowa, and they also stock a supply of kosher cheeses. And so it's been a great way when I meet with parents in Chicago who are very concerned about, can I send my kid to Champaign? When they find out, wait, there is a place where you can get kosher meat and cheese, it really takes the stress off a lot of these families, because Illinois is such a great school. They want to be able to send their kids here, but a lot of observant families are sometimes a little hesitant because of the perception that their kids won't be able to eat when they get down here.
Like they could if they went to a Jewish college.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Or even if they went to school somewhere like Maryland, where you can walk down the street and choose from a number of kosher restaurants.
Sure.
Even.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the distinctive Jewish food, but I also wanted to ask you about the distinctive Jewish music. And we've heard a little example here in the background. What music?
Actually, my cell phone was Sesame Street.
Now, music is very important to Jewish tradition, to mm-hmm. Jewish worship, to Jewish family life. Tell us about Jewish music. How is that part of educational process?
We're lucky enough to incorporate music in our daily lives, as well as with our in school. We have an incredibly talented music teacher who helps to teach prayer, helps to facilitate our services and lead that, as well as there's some special, in fact, I have to say, we have a great music committee at the synagogue who will be providing us with, they've got Oy on the Prairie coming. I'm saying that band correctly, but for our Simchat Torah service that's coming up, and I would highly recommend any of the listeners to come to that. It'll be on October 8th, and it's going to be fabulous. Klezmer music is, of course, the Eastern European tradition.
And Joel, any musical events coming up at Hillel people might want to know about?
Well, we have an a cappella group that is starting. Actually, we're going to be holding open auditions for our Jewish a cappella group on September 2nd from 2 to 6. We are looking forward to having a much more musically interesting program this year, as we have Michael Leff, who I mentioned earlier, that comes from a music background, and we'll be incorporating a lot of music into the programming.
And I might just mention that on September 1st, for any university students listening from either Parkland or University of Illinois, there will be a introductory meeting for people who might be interested in exploring going to Jerusalem the first 2 weeks in January next year. With Jews and Christians and Muslims to look at the holy sites of each of those religions. Well, we're out of time for our program today, but let me thank again our guests for being here. We've been talking with Barry Schweitzer, who is the Director of Education at Sinai Temple, and with her spouse Joel Schweitzer, who's the Executive Director of the Hillel Foundation at the University of Illinois, the very first Hillel Foundation anywhere. I want to thank them for being on the program and for coming in to pre-record it this week for broadcast today. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and next week I'll be talking with Larry Wilson from the First Mennonite Church of Urbana about Mennonite faith and life. And the following week we'll be talking with Don Mason about his experience recently on a trip to Africa for the World Alliance of Reformed Churches. I'm the director of the University YMCA, and at the Y this week we have our big dump and run sale. It's actually not at the Y, it's at the Stock Pavilion at the university, because we ran out of space at the Y. So come to Pennsylvania Avenue, Stock Pavilion, Wednesday the 25th from 4 to 9 for our opening day of the big sale. And then Thursday, Friday, and Saturday will also be open for sale, all kinds of things. That's University Y Dump and Run. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Most of us think in words, not Temple Grandin. She thinks in pictures. Grandin is autistic, and visual thinking is common among people with autism. I'm Tim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, Temple Grandin talks about how thinking in pictures has helped her help animals. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Mall, a member of the Urbana Business Association, sponsoring the 29th annual Urbana Sweet Corn Festival, August 27th and 28th in downtown Urbana. Along with Sweet Corn for All, there's entertainment, a car show, a dog show, an art show, and a children's area with a petting zoo.
Don't miss your chance to win one of 10 major prizes in the WILL sweepstakes, each worth $1,000 or more. a widescreen, high-definition TV from Champagne Audio, a Dell computer, a lounge chair and ottoman from Carter's Furniture, or a $1,000 gift certificate from Corley Photography. You can't win if you don't enter, and entries must be postmarked by September 6. To request an entry form, call 217-333-0850.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 60s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. The high in the middle 80s with south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low in the mid 60s with south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour.